Hey, this is John Lee Dumas from EO Fire, and you're listening to Elective Rotation with Pharmacy Joe. You must be prepared to ignite.
What's up, Pharmacy Nation? I'm Pharmacy Joe. Thank you for listening to the Elective Rotation, a critical care pharmacy podcast. This is episode 58. In this episode, I'll discuss using patient-controlled analgesia in ICU patients. I have all the evidence supporting today's show linked up in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode58. If you know someone who would find this podcast helpful, please share it with them. If you're already in the Pharmacy Nation Slack group, make sure you've downloaded the Slack app from the App Store on your phone or tablet. Installing the mobile app for Slack is what enables real-time messaging with other pharmacists. If you're not already in the Pharmacy Nation group, why not? It's free, and you can sign up at pharmacynation.org. Patient-controlled analgesia, or PCA, is when a patient self-administers opioid medication through the use of a programmable IV pump. PCA allows self-dosing up to a predetermined limit set by the clinician. PCA generally involves a demand dose, such as 1 milligram of morphine every 6 minutes. Select patients may also receive a continuous or basal rate, such as 1 milligram an hour of morphine. A lockout period is programmed in the IV pump to prevent excess opioids from being administered. When used correctly, PCA can allow patients to safely receive opioids while giving the patient a sense of control over their pain. Proper patient selection is critical to the safe use of PCA. For patients in the ICU with postoperative or rapidly resolving pain, PCA can be an excellent choice. Patients must be capable of using PCA correctly. The ISMP, in their monograph for PCA, says, patients must be cognitively, physically, and psychologically capable of understanding the concepts of PCA and handling the procedure necessary to obtain pain relief. This frequently may rule out the use of PCA in many pediatric and confused elderly patients. Less than ideal candidates also include those at risk for respiratory depression due to comorbid conditions such as obesity, asthma, or sleep apnea, or use of concurrent drugs that potentiate opioids. Because the level of nursing care and monitoring is much higher in ICU patients, patient selection for PCA use is different for ICU versus general medical unit patients. When I think about which patients in the ICU might be good candidates for PCA, I go back to my 3 reasons for ICU admission that I talked about at pharmacyjoe.com/episode11. Number one, patients who have a vital system that has failed and we need to support it, for example, respiratory failure or a patient on vasopressors. Number two, something has happened to a patient that makes it likely a vital system will fail, and we need to recognize and support it when that happens. Now, for example, this could be TPA for stroke within the last 24 hours, an overdose of unknown substances, or patients who have undergone a high-risk surgical procedure. And the number three reason for ICU admission is nonsense. So type 2 ICU patients, such as those that have undergone a high-risk surgical procedure, are the ones that are usually most appropriate for PCA use in the ICU. In my practice, this often means thoracic surgery patients who have had a thoracotomy, decortication, lung resection, etc. At my institution, IV PCA is available as morphine, hydromorphone, or fentanyl. Morphine is the gold standard opioid, but patient factors may indicate another opioid should be considered. In general, hydromorphone and fentanyl cause less itching than morphine. Fentanyl is shorter acting than hydromorphone or morphine. Patients and their families must be taught the relationship between pain, pushing the PCA button, and adequate pain relief. They should understand the benefits of PCA and how it works. They should understand how critical it is for only the patient to push the PCA button. If PCA is planned in the postoperative period, this education should ideally begin in the pre-admission process. PCA is an excellent way to allow large doses of opioids to be administered safely to control a patient's pain. However, it is very easy to cross the line between safety and patient harm when using PCA. It is important that only the patient pushes the button on a PCA. Several adverse events, some fatal, have been reported when family members have pushed a PCA button on the patient's behalf. This is called PCA by proxy. One of the key safety benefits of PCA is the self-limiting factor of the patient's mental status. Drowsiness from excessive opioids precedes respiratory depression, and when the patient becomes drowsy, they stop self-administering opioids. This prevents respiratory depression. When others press the button on the patient's behalf, this safety feature of the PCA is bypassed. Most patients who are opioid naive should not be given a basal rate or continuous rate on their PCA. The continuous administration of opioids can give the same adverse effects as PCA by proxy that I just described. Opioid-naive patients especially are susceptible to over-sedation from continuous administration rates on PCA. There are two exceptions that I generally follow regarding my practice of avoiding PCA basal rates in opioid-naive ICU patients. The first is the nighttime basal. Patients who sleep well without pushing their PCA button may awaken in severe pain. If this occurs, I'll use a nighttime-only basal rate between the hours of 10 p.m. and 6 a.m., and I'll never exceed 1 milligram per hour of morphine or its equivalent for this nighttime basal. And the second is unusual circumstances that may be causing severe pain. Occasionally, thoracic surgery patients are not candidates for epidural use. When this happens, postoperative pain management is usually much more difficult. In this type of scenario, I'll consider using a basal rate, again at a maximum of 1 milligram per hour of morphine or its equivalent in an opioid-naive patient. Concentration errors when switching between opioids have caused harm to many patients. For example, if a PCA pump is programmed for morphine 1 milligram per ml, and is then switched to hydromorphone 1 milligram per ml without the pump settings being changed, a 7-fold overdose results. At my institution, we have eliminated the problem by making our PCA concentrations equianalgesic. Our only concentrations are morphine 1 milligram per ml, and our standard size bag is 50 milligrams and 50 mls, hydromorphone 0.15 milligrams per ml. Our standard bag is 7.5 milligrams and 50 mls. And fentanyl, 10 micrograms per ml. And our standard bag is 500 mics and 50 mls. If a patient is receiving a large amount of opioid, we will make a bigger bag, but always at the same concentration. In this way, we completely eliminate the chance of a concentration-based PCA error. The initial bolus is essential to use when initiating PCA in a patient whose pain is not yet controlled. At my institution, the suggested initial bolus is 40 micrograms of fentanyl or 0.6 milligrams of hydromorphone or 4 milligrams of morphine. This bolus should be adjusted based on patient-specific factors such as tolerance to opioids and risk of respiratory depression. For most opioid-naive patients, a demand dose of 1 milligram of morphine or the equivalent, either 10 mics of fentanyl or 0.15 milligrams hydromorphone, given every 6 to 8 minutes is sufficient. For patients that are tolerant to opioids, a larger dose may be used. As I discussed previously, a basal rate in an opioid-naive patient greatly raises the risk of respiratory depression and should not be used routinely. For patients who are tolerant to opioids, a portion of their daily opioid dose can be converted into the basal rate provided by the PCA. For patients on long-acting opioids, such as fentanyl patches or extended-release oral opioids, I like to continue their usual long-acting regimen and use the PCA with no basal rate. My institution's policy is to maintain one single source of demand or PRN opioid and one single source of long-acting opioid. This means that a fentanyl patch may be left on and a PCA may be used for demand dosing only. In my experience, it is best to avoid removing a fentanyl patch only to have to place it back on at a later time. PCA allows for rapid titration of the opioid dose. With the typical PCA settings I've outlined, the patient is largely in control of the titration. It's appropriate for a clinician to evaluate the PCA effectiveness within 1 or 2 hours of starting PCA. Things that I look for include clinically meaningful reductions in pain scores, is the patient satisfied with their level of pain relief, and is the patient able to participate in their care, such as do physical therapy, deep breathing, coughing, pulmonary toileting, etc. If any of those items are not satisfactory, I'll troubleshoot and titrate the PCA regimen. Things that I look for include whether the patient appears to be a good candidate for PCA, the patient's perception of the effectiveness of PCA, and how many times the patient has pushed the button versus how many doses they have received. Sometimes it becomes clear after starting PCA that the patient is just not a good candidate. Perhaps they don't have the cognition necessary or some other reason is keeping them from using PCA properly. If this happens, I'll make an assessment to either provide additional patient education on using the PCA or to discontinue the PCA in favor of nurse-administered analgesia. A significant number of times, the patient will mention that they don't feel relief from a PCA dose of 1 milligram of morphine or its equivalent every 6 minutes. When this happens, I'll consider doubling the PCA dose to 2 milligrams of morphine or its equivalent and extending the interval to every 12 minutes. If the patient's pain is not adequately controlled on PCA and the patient has pushed the PCA button many more times than they have received doses, I'll increase the total opioid dose available via the PCA by 25 to 50%. When optimizing the PCA dose, I'll avoid increasing the basal rate in almost all circumstances. Increasing the demand dose rather than the basal dose maintains the safety benefits inherent with using PCA. Being in the ICU, most patients are already on continuous pulse oximetry and are being frequently monitored by their nurse. When titrating PCA doses past the starting dose, I'll often add continuous pulse oximetry monitoring if it is not being used already. Listeners can support the show when they shop using my link to Amazon. It will cost you no extra money, and I will receive a small commission from Amazon. Just use my link, pharmacyjoe.com/shop, to take you to Amazon each time you shop. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you in the next episode of the Elective Rotation.